Today's program has been brought to you by Fairway Market, like no other market, a New York City institution that sells the best local, national, and international artisan foods for prices that can't be beat. For more information, visit fairwaymarket.com. Broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to heritageradionetwork.org.
Good afternoon. I'm Amanda Freitag, filling in for Jason Colucci on the morning after, and I couldn't be more excited to be here today with my amazing guests. I have Chef Elizabeth Faulkner, Chef Nancy Olson, Chef Vesa, and Rick from the Mass Brothers. You guys, this is a sweet and salty crowd right here. Sweet, savory, and there's a lot of good stuff going on. We're not going to have enough time to talk about everything I want to talk about.
Wait, but a little spicy.
It's a little spicy, right? I'm adding some spice here today. But first, this is a great combination because Elizabeth and I were host and guest on radio, and then Elizabeth interviewed these guys, the Mass Brothers, on radio as well. So we're all familiar with each other, and Nancy and I have worked together on a little pop-up scenario. So we're all here. We're all happy to be here. We all have cocktails, I think. I think we're missing one. But my first introduction goes to Elizabeth, and I just want to say welcome to Brooklyn.
Thank you.
Welcome in general, because you're transplanted from the West Coast to here. And I want everybody to know who's listening that she's opening a restaurant very shortly. She's awfully calm for the fact that she's opening a restaurant.
I always have that calm look, but that's not really what's going on the inside.
Called Crescendo, and just tell us a little bit about it. And just tell us a little bit about your transplant so everybody knows.
Well, you know, I cooked in San Francisco for the last 23 years. I've been in love with New York my whole life. I've always wanted to live out here. I kind of had a midlife crisis, and I'm like, okay, time to move to New York. Brooklyn is perfect. I love it. It's just like there's so much cool food stuff going on here and so much attention to detail and in all the product and everything that's around here. And it's a good challenge, and I have a great business partner, Nancy Puglisi, and another partner, Darren Crawford, who's our bar manager, and we're opening up a restaurant called Crescendo with a K, because it's Brooklyn, on Atlantic between Bond and Hoyt, and it's definitely Southern Italian inspired. I don't have an Italian bone in my body that I know of, but I love the food so much, and I'm so excited about cooking Neapolitan pizza and lots of pastas, and a lot of the history of Sicilian people in New York is right in that area in Brooklyn that I'm going into. So I just am paying homage to all the good food stuff that came from that region, that comes from that region.
So have you been absorbing some of that Brooklyn heritage? I mean, what have you seen, learned? I mean, now you're living in it. You're absorbing it now. And this is before you're open, while you can still have a life.
I know.
What are you seeing in your neighborhood?
Well, it's cool because Brooklyn has a lot of old restaurants that have been around for forever. I went to Fernando's Focaccia the other night. It opened in 1904.
Wow.
I mean, like, that doesn't even really exist in San Francisco because of that big earthquake that happened 100 years ago.
And that doesn't happen here, knock on wood.
Right. And I've heard about a lot of really cool old places. I'm also seeing a lot of the modern, I don't mean modernism in food, but just the newer restaurants and the attention to produce and what's local and farm-to-table stuff. And I think that people are just so excited about, you know, sustainability and amazing product that we can take care of our planet with. And that happens to be a big focus in Brooklyn. And that's very exciting. That's very much like the Bay Area.
Yeah. I mean, I think we were just talking about it because we just had brunch. And one of our brunch guests said to us, aren't you going to miss the produce on the West Coast? And I'm sure you haven't found out yet, but in winter...
I moved here in the summertime, so yes. I'm already, you know, I'm like, oh, wow, who cares? There's tomatoes, there's eggplant galore, and there's those little Cape gooseberries, and lots of gooseberries. And what I like, actually, is the difference that, like, I never get to have currants, black currants or red currants. I mean, I can get them in the West Coast, but they don't really grow out there, so... I mean, that's exciting, and I know that the root vegetables are really good here. Like, they're heartier and better.
Right.
So for me, it's exciting because it's like, well, I love California. I'm not knocking it at all, and the produce, but it's like, it's just different. It's a different region. I get to approach things differently. I want to eat differently here because of the humidity, because of the heat right now, and then because of the wintertime.
It's interesting. So you're about to experience some seasons.
Right, real seasons, and that's exciting for a Californian, really.
I think so. I mean, and I know... Rick, you grew up on the West Coast, is that true?
Or I grew up in Iowa, in a tiny little farm town in Iowa, yeah.
Oh my goodness, so that's in the middle.
Yeah.
That is in the middle. It's a little cold there, isn't it?
Yeah, we saw seasons, yeah.
You saw lots of seasons. Yeah. Well, Elizabeth, I hope you brought your snow boots, or you're going to buy some.
I have some. I'm good.
But the greatest thing, I think about also having you guys here today, is just this sort of... It's all sort of product-based in my mind, you know, and I know that's where you come from, and Nancy, and you guys, of course, and I think that's just this conversation that chefs and food artisans are having right now is the product, you know, and that's what it starts with, and as you know, running a business is incredibly expensive, you know it, but it's about making that choice, mm-hmm. whether you're going to use that product or not, and the balance of what you're going to highlight and what you're going to do to just make your business run. And I think that's sort of the non-glamorous behind the scenes of what happens, you know, and the choices you'll have to make. And will you be able to use Mass Brothers chocolate, or will you have to choose something else because of a financial reason, or will they work with you? You know, I think that's very interesting when you get to that business owner standpoint, you know, it's like as a young chef, you're like, why can't we just use all the best products? And it's like, you're not the one, you know, doing the bottom line at the end of the day. And I think that's something that a lot of consumers don't know about. And then when they're complaining about menu prices, they're why, you know?
But don't you think, I mean, I feel like the public is a lot more educated because of the media attention that food has been getting over the past, I don't know, 10 years?
I think that's what, if we're doing our jobs correctly, what we're trying to do.
I mean, I feel like if I make a cannoli with Mass Brothers chocolate, you know, it's not, I might make my tartufo that features chocolate, it's going to be a seasonal thing, so it might have a lot of chocolate at some point. And for me, it's like, that's a selling point, and also it's just really good product. So I mean, I want to put it on there, and I know that people are going to respond to it because they're like, "Oh, I know that," or "I've heard of that," or "I know that's really good quality." Yeah. So I'm going to pay. You know, it's going to be more than the corner bakery that has cannoli because it's in a restaurant setting.
Sure,
but it's also got really good product in it. Really good, you know, ricotta and really good chocolate.
Yeah,
really good pistachios.
Yeah, and as Nancy knows, I mean, in a larger restaurant, those choices are not just made within the kitchen. I mean, you make them with your other chefs. And
absolutely.
Do you... I actually have a question for you guys. I don't know if you want to get a little closer to the mic.
Okay.
Do you have purchasers? Nancy Olson, pastry chef, Gramercy Tavern, Union Square Hospitality Group. Thank you for being here. I'm sorry I'm throwing questions out to everybody because I think it relates to all of us. I think it's really important to me to see it from many different... sides of the business.
Absolutely. And for me, it comes from a lot of different sides as well. I mean, within our company, you know, Square Hospitality Group, we have somebody who does head up purchasing.
Right.
And he helps to try and make us more aware of some of these great products that are out there. And that's really how I use him as, because when Danny first started opening restaurants, he decided never to dictate who buys what, because then each restaurant would cease to be unique.
Right.
So... Gramercy Tavern has its own purchasing power, and then within Gramercy Tavern, I mean, as a pastry chef, I get to choose what I want.
Right.
Mike Anthony gets to choose what he wants, and you know,
and that's very different from the other restaurants in your group as well. Like you guys, obviously will share information, but you're keeping it very different.
Absolutely, because we each have our unique tastes, and our restaurant is very unique, and we try and showcase different things, and it gives us the opportunity to grow as chefs as well. You know, maybe you start out being loyal to a certain product, and then you can kind of grow and figure out, wow, what's out there, and there's always something new. So
well, that was going to be one of my questions to you, and anybody can jump in on this too. And I think it's probably different for you, Rick, and Besa. But what keeps you inspired? Now, you've been at Gramercy Tavern for
6 years.
6 years.
Yeah.
Okay. That's a long time in the chef world.
It is.
How do you stay inspired? I mean, do you head out to little boroughs? Do you travel? Do you find artisans that keep you inspired, or does it come to you?
I guess a little bit of everything, and really on a daily basis, my staff keeps me inspired. I've got a pastry team of 12 people, which is a lot for a pastry kitchen, but we do about 400 desserts a day, so, and they're all young and really excited about things, so they're all coming back from their weekends, guess what I had, and...
So you don't have to go out.
I mean, you know, I can go out too, but they just come back, and their enthusiasm for it's so amazing, and it keeps them excited about working with me, and if we can have this dialogue about, wow, what else is out there?
Right.
You know, it's really cool.
I think that's great, and I think it's hard for us, maybe at this level, to get excited about anything, you know, unless it is brought to us and it's in a certain realm. It's like, look at this. They are really doing it right. You
absolutely
know? And when somebody brings it to you and you're like, well, I thought about going to check that out, but it seemed like what everybody else was doing, you know.
And there's so many tiny little shops and so many places that, you know, maybe they get pressed, maybe you miss the day they got pressed,
right.
Or maybe, and to have all these other young people going out scouting on these missions excited about it, just have them come back and report, and it's really cool.
Now on the flip side, how do you encourage everybody without squashing their creativity if you can't use their ideas?
Well, I mean, that is one thing. We talk about their ideas because we're excited about it.
Right.
And I tell them one day, when you get to be the chef, you get to use whatever ideas you want. But here, we got to have one leader, and it's me. So
that's the hard part. I really
it is.
Do. I've experienced that. I don't know, Elizabeth, if you have. I mean, you guys have a small team at the Mass Brothers. But, you know, it's like you want your team to have this high energy of creativity, but you can't use it all because then it's chaos.
It is.
You know, yeah. And it's...
Well, everything needs editing
right.
process,
yeah.
You know? And I think that's what... When you've kind of worked up the ranks and you're in the position, you get to be the editor.
Right.
And so people might have a lot of ideas and stuff, and you're like, that's cool, and I like that, and but I would do it like this.
Right.
That's a good way to put it. Editing.
Yeah.
It is.
It's true. I always... I was encouraged to remember my creative ideas, write them down maybe for that one day that I might be a chef,
yes.
But to remember that I wasn't the chef at the time. In a very nice way, my chef said to me, you know, someday you'll find your style. Right now, this is my style, and you have to emulate that.
But do you guys remember, like, I remember being a young chef and looking and talking to my pastry chef at a restaurant called Moss's back in the early 90s in San Francisco. And I was so excited about dessert, and I just wanted to say, like, oh, we should be doing this. And I have to, like, sit there and edit myself or censor myself and be like, totally not the wrong place, right? Not the right place for this right now.
Yeah.
And
well, you're a rare breed. I have to take a quick break. I'm being told to take a quick break so we can all take a sip of our Bloody Marys. And we'll be right back with more of this amazing conversation.
Cool.
By herself in a mother's summer dress. Oh, kid, she doesn't need your help. She studied art in Spain. Tall boys across her brain. Yeah, tall boys, men, they'll do anything.
Hi, I'm Steve Jenkins from Fairway Markets. I've devoted my idiot career to the old ways, the old recipes, the old tools, the old geography of where serious foods come from for centuries. And I've strived to make these wonderful things available to New Yorkers for 37 years. So it's a fait accompli for us to support Heritage Radio Network. And I hope you will too, and I hope you'll keep tuning in. For more information, please visit fairwaymarket.com.
Strikes a song. Oh, kid, they're playing it all night long. And she takes you by the hand, cause she's young but understands the tall dreams inside every man. And I bet she's out there still, tapping at your windowsill. She keep you up all night.
Just go. Out. Welcome back to The Morning After. I'd like to introduce my other guests who have been a little bit quiet here. You know, us women can be overwhelming. Rick Mast, and please, for my sake, chef, introduce yourself and say your name properly, because I won't be able to.
Okay, my name is Vesa Parvianen. That's my name.
And tell us where you're from. And I was just talking to you before we came on the show about how long you've been here.
Came in New York in October.
From?
From Finland, Helsinki.
Mm-hmm. Welcome. Thank Everybody's you, coming to New York. This is great. Welcome, welcome. And so you tell us exactly what you're doing with Rick and Michael.
I'm working for the pastry department at Mass Brothers Chocolate.
Nice.
So basically we have our retail shop. We're selling a lot of pastries, truffles and cakes and stuff like that. So I'm
You brought me some sweets today.
Taste some,
oh my God, you have
some truffles and
I'm a huge chocolate fan. You want to just tell me what you have here and we can talk a little bit about your truffles?
Oh, those are hand-rolled truffles. With one is with almonds and sea salt. One is with roasted hazelnuts. And one is with cocoa nibs.
Oh my gosh. Okay. So now you're kind of expanding a little bit. Now, so Rick, I'm in awe of what you guys are doing, by the way.
Oh, thanks.
For the people who are listening who don't know anything about these guys, it's a shame that you don't. But we're going to tell you today. Mass Brothers, how long have you guys been in business now?
It's been, I guess, almost 6 years.
Congratulations.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
They make bean-to-bar chocolate.
Yes.
Bean-to-bar chocolate is what we're going to say. But what you do is completely extraordinary.
Yeah.
How thanks. You get your beans and what you do to it. So give us a brief description.
Yeah, well, my brother and I, we started kind of as hobbyists, kind of like how people get into home brewing beer. We started making chocolate out of our apartment and making it from scratch. So when we started realizing that people don't do that, that that's a very uncommon thing. In fact, nobody in New York was doing it. And, you know, we decided to quit our day jobs.
What were your day jobs? Yeah. That is actually on my list of questions.
Yeah, I was a cook. I was a chef. I was a line cook.
Really?
Yeah.
Where?
Do you
want to talk about that?
Sure, yeah. I was just talking about how I did my first stage at Gramercy. I worked at the Soho House on the line there for a while. And I worked for Jacques Torres for a while. So, I worked all around. I would go in the summertime. I'd work at the Outermost Inn under Dan Sauer, who's literally one of my favorite chefs of all time.
Wow.
He was running a kitchen there at the time at Outermost Inn. It's the best chef job of all time. We would, you know, prepping all day. I would go out in the fields of this house on a cliff, overlooking a lighthouse in the ocean.
Where is this?
In Martha's Vineyard.
Okay.
And I would be picking butternut squash.
Apply for a job there.
All this stuff. I would just be like picking herbs and stuff like that throughout the day, and then while I would be prepping, I'd be looking at a lighthouse and the waves crashing against rocks. It was amazing.
This is an oddly romantic cook experience. Yeah, yeah. It doesn't always happen like that.
It never happens like that.
And was your brother in the industry as well?
No, my brother was, he's the other side of the brain. My brother was, you know, an economics major in college, worked in accounting for a bunch of film production companies and stuff like that. But we were roommates here in New York, and I would come back with all of these ideas, whether it was making cheeses or homebrewing beer, all of that kind of stuff. Kind of that we were kind of in that scene. What's still going on in Brooklyn back, you know, a while, maybe like 8 or 9 years ago, and we really settled in on chocolate. So it wasn't just a love for sweets and pastries.
Okay.
It was a love for how are things made that people don't know how they're made. That's really how it got started.
That's great answer, because that was going to be my main question. Why chocolate?
Yeah.
You know, some people, you know, would look back and say, okay, my great-grandfather's you know, cousin was a chocolatier, and this is how I got into it. But it doesn't always have to be that way. It can just be a curiosity about that product, and then a love for it and a passion for it.
And especially, I mean, chocolate is so fascinating. It's arguably the most popular food on earth, yet people aren't connected to it like they are their heirloom tomato or their grass-fed beef or their whatever. It's sort of, people are still content with buying a dollar chocolate bar at the gas station. They're not. It's not the same frame of mind. It's still a candy bar that you grew up with.
Right. Know? And so. I think what I've watched a couple of things about you guys online. I did my research, but what I found very interesting is what you kept saying was, this is not a candy bar. And I think what I grew up with here, chocolate was candy.
Right.
And it was a candy bar, and it was sweet. And it wasn't about chocolate. Chocolate to me was just something that was sweet and sugary, and that was another flavor. It was chocolate, vanilla, and strawberry, you know? It wasn't a thing. It wasn't a product.
Yeah.
And what I find so fascinating, you can talk a little bit about it, is, first of all, you get a lot of your beans from the Dominican Republic. Is that correct?
Yeah.
That you brought the product back to the farmer. You brought your finished chocolate back to them.
To the farmer. Yeah, yeah.
And yep. I had an actual tear in my eye when I was watching this because that doesn't happen.
Yeah, it really doesn't happen. Doesn't happen. It's hopefully happening more and more, and I think it will. You know, I think we bring a lot of. We've been fortunate to get a lot of in our efforts to educate the public about what we're doing. We've been really fortunate to get a lot of media attention, and so we're hoping to take advantage of that to show people who is farming your chocolate bar.
Right. You know? And that equals people learning about, wait, there's something more to chocolate than this just thing wrapped up in foil and a package and kisses or whatever. I'm not going to say brand names, but you know, it's just going to, that education, I know it's extreme because a lot of people can't even grasp that. They've never even seen the cacao bean. They don't even know what that is or how it gets from, you know, bean to bar.
Yeah.
But so even just talking about it, I think.
Yeah. I mean, everything we do, every step of the way, we seek to connect people to that process, to the farmers, really. And which is, you know, the obvious things are minimal processing and, you know, hands-on. You know, our chocolate is ready when it tastes good. You know, our chocolate is made with just beans and sugar. It's sort of what is commonly being known as the American craft chocolate way. If you go around the world to, by all means, what used to be known as the sort of flagship locations for chocolate around the world, they're looking now to America, to small American manufacturers, to teach them what American craft chocolate is.
That's groundbreaking. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Not a lot of European countries are looking to us to teach them things, about food culture.
Some of our biggest fans, we're fortunate enough to spend the day with Alain Ducasse. He came to our factory and made chocolate with us for a day and just said, you know, nobody's doing this in the world. Nobody does this in France. Nobody, he goes, you guys are true artisans. You're true craftsmen. And the world is looking for you and companies like you to show us how chocolate should be made.
That must have been an incredibly rewarding day in your life. Because, I mean, here's what happens, and this, I think, is why you guys are so interesting and amazing and everybody should support you, is you had this passion to do this thing.
Yeah.
And now you're sort of, whether you like it or not, the ambassador about this product, about more than just your product, about how chocolate gets made and bean to bar. And I know maybe watching a couple of those videos about you guys, maybe your brother's not as into being.
Yeah. He hates it. You notice Vess is here. He's a great, Vess is a good.
Well, now Chef Vess is really.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Chef Vess is lucky because he gets to make the product.
Yeah.
And this, unfortunately, now is going to even step you in a direction probably more of you talking about the product.
It's really great. I mean, first of all, I mean, my brother, it's more an issue of him being shy.
Yeah,
he's outrageously shy. And we were guest judges on Iron Chef, and it was literally his most horrifying day ever.
Oh my god. And you were just judging, for God's sake.
That is the polar opposite of a scenario that he would want to be in.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh my god. Wow. Yeah. You got him back for a few things of childhood, didn't you?
Yeah.
But that's, I mean, I think that's what probably is where you're at in a crossroads, because you are now becoming an ambassador for this artisanal product that you guys, first of all, you have to now continue to make it so well, which you do.
Yeah.
And now you're going to have chefs like Alain Ducasse saying thank you for what you're doing.
Yeah. I mean, it's really incredible. We're really fortunate. And to be honest, we embrace the ambassador role as much as possible without over making it sound so hardcore. But
No. I mean, I think...
We embrace it, and we want to be that, because we feel like we're inspiring every neighborhood, every town to have their own chocolate maker, or it's also inspired people beyond chocolate, people that are sick of their jobs that want to follow their passions. I think that's a big thing that we've been able to inspire. So I'm all about it.
Cool. I love that.
I noticed a place over, I was just driving, happened to be in Red Hook area the other day, and there I saw a place that's making chocolate there.
Yeah.
I don't know what it's called. I forgot.
It's called Cacao Prieto.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
We're friends with them, and it's primarily, I think, a rum distillery, but they're also making chocolate there too. So again, that's a perfect
example. It was a cool
looking
spot. I was like, there's a cafe there, and then what is this? Okay. Yeah, yeah. Chocolate is all over Brooklyn right now.
Yeah. Well, I love that idea that you're saying. Actually, now come to think of it, like, for every sort of small town and community to have their own chocolate maker.
Yeah.
It's like, I mean, have your shoemaker,
your cheesemaker,
your butcher shop,
your bread maker.
Can you imagine living in a world? I mean, this is again my sort of utopian idea about how life should be. But you walk down, you get your cut of meat that you want, then you go to your chocolate maker and you'd be like, oh, you know what? I'm making this dessert. Could you? Oh, the Peruvian. Okay, right. Great. 74%. Great. Okay, I'll take a quarter pound of that. You know, and then you're all set. Wow. You know,
yeah. That is some kind of utopia. Seriously,
I think we all agree on that.
Yeah. I see a theme park coming. Yeah.
And then this is a double-sided question. I wanted to ask you, and I think this is hard for everybody, when you do well, would you expand?
Yeah, well, I mean, obviously you want to have a principled expansion. But we are opening a new location in South Street Seaport.
Congratulations.
Yeah, on Water Street, just facing the... It's not quite ready yet. Yeah, but... it's going to be a great opportunity for us to educate people about what we're up to, and it's going to be we're not going to be manufacturing there. It's going to be a retail shop,
okay.
And then but it's a big space, so we're actually holding educational and community events there. So already done butcher classes. We're going to do a history of ice cream class. We're going to do pasta making classes. We're going to have dance parties. You can
dance
go there
party.
And hang out and drink beer. Yeah. It's going to be very much the way our crew calls it, a foodler hang space. So.
Foodler hang space. Chef Asa, are you going to bring a little Finnish flair to that?
That might be Finnish tango lessons.
That's hot. All right, we're going to take another break, and we're going to come back and talk to Nancy a little bit more about all of this, and we're going to wrap it up. Welcome back to The Morning After here. We have so much to talk about. I was just looking at the clock and it's like, we need to extend this show for another hour. So this is going to be a question between Rick and Nancy and Chef Asa. And of course, Elizabeth, you understand all this. Are you selling wholesale to restaurants?
Yeah.
Chocolate?
Yep, we sell wholesale. That's actually a big growing part of our business and a big thing. We work with Thomas Keller's places. We work with all the way to Fat Duck and everywhere.
Oh, you do. But I was going to ask you if you sold outside of the country.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. But also tons of local Brooklyn places, you know, Marlowe and Diner and Frankie's and...
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now,
I saw it at Shake Shack, too.
Shake Shack, yeah.
That's what I was going to ask, Nancy. I mean,
yeah, I saw Mark, the GM of Shake Shack, here. He's partying in the backyard right now.
There is a disco party going on here today.
Is it forget about it or fudget about
it?
I don't know.
I don't know how to say it. Yeah. I ignore that, yeah.
Nancy, as a pastry chef, obviously you've worked with tons of chocolates.
Yes.
And that may or may not be your favorite ingredient. I don't know. I know a couple of pastry chefs that are not.
It's hard to pick a favorite, especially being right by the market. There's so many great fruits, but in the winter, chocolate can just take a step up.
Right. Mm-hmm. Exactly. And so, again, about purchasing. Obviously, you've eaten their chocolate. Do you work with it in the restaurant, or do you use it? I mean, you don't have to tell us what brand you use, but it's another choice thing. It's like, how do you choose what you use?
Right. So we use quite a few different chocolates at Gramercy. Right now, we aren't using Mass Brothers. Right. Definitely now that I'm on the spot,
I put you on the spot.
No, but I just ate one of those truffles and it was ridiculously good. So never mind, just on the spot. But I feel like, and I don't know where you're at on this, Rick, but I've worked with a couple other companies who've sort of started getting started on chocolates, and it takes a while to get into a groove and find something that's going to be consistent on what the cocoa butter is going to be and the cocoa salads are going to be. So that way, I mean, at the scale that I'm working at, I need to have something that's really consistent that I can work with and teach 12 other people to work with.
Right.
I can't just keep, I could keep changing things, but I think I might lose my mind.
I mean, I think that's the big transition that I think that a lot of restaurants will have to make, pastry chefs will have to make with Kraft chocolate, which is this bean and sugar recipe.
Right.
And that's that there is no cocoa butter added, which is traditionally that defines couverture, right? You have extra cocoa butter for ease of use.
Right.
And
you'd have to add that to your recipes then.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, depending on what we did with it, I know I've just found that some of these really great bean to bar ones are really high on chocolate solids, cocoa solids in them, and it just changes if I make a ganache, how much cream I'm going to have to add to it so that it's a silky smooth one. And it just takes a little bit more work on my end, really.
Yeah, no, I understand that, because as that chef that comes running in after finding something like this to my pastry chef, Colleen Graves, that bless your heart, who I used to torture all the time, I'd be like, let's use this. And she'd be like, okay, chef. You know, and then she'd make her chocolate cake, and it would be like this seized up mound of what's supposed to be a cake, and it would be fudge. And she's like, this is what you wanted.
That's also the huge part about Vesa's job as executive pastry chef for us. He's also working with all of the pastry chefs. He provides a service to help use the more temperamental chocolate that, you know, we like to say that our chocolate may be more difficult to use, but it's worth it. You know, like all things that are more difficult, it pays dividends.
That was going to be my other question. Now, Chef Vesa, are you going to go into the restaurants that are buying the chocolate and work with them? Or are you going to taste with them? How are you going to do that?
Yeah, we've done a few times. I went there, work with the chefs and told them how to use it, share some recipes, but also they came to the factory, see the factory and see how the chocolate is actually made, and that way they can also share some thoughts of chocolate and how I use it there, work with the recipes and that kind of thing.
In our factory, we have he's in charge of this large test kitchen where we're every day constantly testing new recipes, new ways to use the chocolate.
Wow.
Yeah. And in fact, I think that because American craft style chocolate is more difficult to use, we're putting out a cookbook that will come out next year that really just gives straightforward recipes of kind of revisits American classics that will show you how to integrate, you know, great American chocolate
That's really useful. And I was just going to ask you guys about that. So you have this cookbook coming out.
Yeah. Not till next fall.
But you're working on it. I have Elizabeth's cookbook in my hands right now, cooking off the clock.
Nice.
Hot off the press. I'm so excited. And Nancy, now you have a few under your belt, or are you working on one right now?
No, we're working on one right now. It should be out in August or September of next year, a Gramercy Tavern cookbook. We're really excited about it.
Cool. Congratulations.
Gramercy Tavern will be 19 years old when that comes out, and it'll be our first one. So
Wow.
Very excited.
Yeah. Well, I would imagine that in that book in particular, that more than 30% is going to be pastry.
Well, there's going to be a pretty good amount of pastry in there.
Yeah. I think your department deserves a lot of attention.
Thank you.
I remember my experiences there, and I always remember that beautiful, lengthy finish to the meal. You know, that the way the sweets start to come and the way that they finish. And it's an unforgettable part of that meal, and it's always a very important part of that meal and that experience there.
It is.
I have to thank you for that and your integrity on that.
Well, thank you. I mean, I was lucky I got to come in. Gramercy Tavern has an incredible history of desserts, you know, with Claudia Fleming being there. I just got to sort of like pick it up and carry it and just hope to maintain it. Make it my own maybe a little bit, but
Now, just give us a little insider, and this will be my last, you know, push the button. Now, Union Square Hospitality Group seems very buttoned up. You know, Danny Meyer is the standard of restaurants. What are the company parties like? Come on.
I've been to some of their parties.
Yeah, they might get a little out of control.
I mean, 11 Madison's won a couple of awards.
Yeah, those are definitely out of control. Listen, it's usually me that gets the really bad photographs taken, so I don't want to rent my own self out. I still have a job there.
But what I mean, I think what the bar is and the standard that other restaurateurs are trying to live up to is how well the employees are treated there.
Absolutely. That makes it an amazing place to work. It really, really does. It's a Gramercy Tavern is a great big family. I mean, there's about 180 people who work there.
Wow.
So it's a really big family. But everybody really looks out for each other. And, you know, it seems like I'm spouting off something from a Danny book when I say
no,
it, but I'm really
I'm
not.
Asking.
It really comes out of, yeah. It really comes out of, I think everybody's hearts that it really, we take care of each other, and not just within each restaurant, but from restaurant to restaurant, you know, that the pastry chefs will get together and we'll try and support each other. Like, hey, what kind of things are you running into management wise, produce wise, recipe testing wise, and just, you know, and when our cooks are ready for the next step, whether it's a sous chef position or a chef position, we're all there to support them. And I mean, I think the industry as a whole is a big family.
Right.
So we're just one small part of that bigger industry family.
Right.
Some families are more dysfunctional than others.
Right.
We hope that, you know, we're trying to function.
Well, it is a restaurant environment.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
You know what we're talking about here.
Absolutely.
But, you know, just in wrapping up, I mean, I think that we all represent something that's sort of new and on the forefront, but then at the same time, you know, representing old school and how to keep it going, how to keep the integrity. And it's sort of that back and forth always in our industry. And, you know, Rick and Chef Vesa and Mike, I mean, you guys are sort of almost bringing it back and bringing it to the forefront of using artisanal products and how to make them. You know, Nancy, what goes on at the Union Square Hospitality Group, Gramercy Tavern, what you do and the people that you work with, your team every day is like a standard that I think everybody who even is entering the culinary industry needs to look at, you know. And I think Elizabeth, I mean, I think your story is unbelievable because it's a can do anything story. You know, you can do anything you want if you're passionate about it. West Coast, check that off the list. East Coast, Brooklyn, here I come. Pizza, pastry, I can do it all.
That's awesome.
Bring it on, you know. And
I'm not somebody that runs around carrying an American flag, but I feel like we're lucky because in America you actually can do all this stuff, and that's pretty unique.
And we get to talk about it, and now, I mean, we get to educate about it, and I think that's sort of what becomes our role now, educators. I mean, we're not just these young, crazy cooks who have ideas and we don't know what to do with them. We're the ones who have to sort of rein that in and decide, where's this all going to go in our industry? So I think we're all really important people in this room. And we all drink Modelo.
Modelo tall boys, just to clarify.
So exciting.
So I'm just going to say a big thank you to Jason Colucci, Jesse, who I love, who makes this whole thing run, and all my guests, Elizabeth, Nancy, Chef Vesa, Rick. Thank you all for being here. Thank you for bringing me chocolate.
Yeah, no worries.
Oh, my gosh. And just thank you for keeping it up, what you guys do. It's a hard industry. It's a tough game, and it's worth it. And I thank everybody for being here today.
Yay!
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Disco party! Woo!
And go Nets this fall.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.